You could have been happy, man. Not just safe, happy. Like we used to be. Lucian scooped Waylon onto the floor and followed him out the door. When they'd gone, taking my beer and their righteous frustrations with them, I sat in the dark and stared at the blank TV, doing my best not to think about what they'd said. I went so far as to start looking for large parcels of land far the fuck away from Knockemout. My phone signaled a text. Steph, seriously, I warned you, man. You couldn't have just not been a selfish dick. I tossed my phone aside and closed my eyes. Could it possibly be true that my best efforts to take care of the people I cared about amounted to me pushing a mountain of money between us? Money gave them security, and it protected me. The pounding on my door jolted Waylon awake. He gave a short, sharp bark, then decided the chair was more comfortable and immediately went back to sleep. "Go the fuck away," I called. "Open the damn door, Morgan." It wasn't Nash or Lucian back for round two. It was worse. I opened the door to find Naomi's dad standing there in pajama pants and a sweatshirt. Lou looked pissed. But the bourbon I'd switched to after my last uninvited guest drank all my beer numbed me. "If you came here to punch me in the face, someone already beat you to it." "Good. I hope it was Naomi," Lou said, pushing his way inside. "I really needed that 1,000 acres. "She's too classy for that." Lou stopped in the foyer and turned to face me. "She is. She's also too hurt to see the truth." "Why is everyone so obsessed with the truth?" I asked, using air quotes. "Why can't people just mind their own damn business and stick to their own truths?" "Because it's easier to see someone else's, and more fun to kick someone else's ass when they've got their head shoved up it." "I thought you, of all people, would be doing a victory dance over this. You never liked me with her." "I never trusted you with her. There's a difference. And I suppose you came here to educate me." "I suppose I did. Someone's got to." I'd add a moat around my bunker as a last line of defense. "I'm 43 years old, Lou. I don't need a father-son moment." "Tough shit, because that's what you're gonna get. I'm sorry that you suffered so much loss so early in life. I'm sorry that your mom died and your dad abandoned you. Liza's told us bits and pieces. I'm sorry you lost your grandfather just a few years later. It's not fair. And I can't blame you for wanting to hide from all that pain." "I'm not hiding. I'm a goddamn open book. I told your daughter what she could expect from me. It's not my fault she got her hopes up." "That would be true if it weren't for one thing." I scrubbed my hand over my face. "If I let you tell me the one thing, will you leave?" "You didn't do it because you didn't care. You did it because you cared too damn much, and it scared you." I snorted into my glass, trying my best to ignore the tightening in my chest. "Son, you fucked up big time," he continued. "I may be Naomi's father, and that might bias me, but I know my daughter is one of a kind, a once-in-a-lifetime woman, just like her mom. And I don't like what it says about how you feel about yourself that you don't think you deserve her." I put my glass down. He hadn't said that I didn't deserve her. He'd said I thought I didn't deserve her. "Do you deserve Amanda?" I asked. "Hell no. Still don't. But I've spent every day of my life since I met her trying to be the kind of man who does. She made me a better man. She gave me the kind of life I never dreamed I'd have. And yeah, we've had our rough times, most of them revolving around Tina. But the fact is, I've never once regretted sticking." I remained stalwartly silent, wishing I could be anywhere else but here. "Sooner or later, you have to accept that you're not responsible for other people's choices. Worse, sometimes you can't fix what's wrong with them." He looked me dead in the eye when he said it. I'm not responsible for my daughter's choices or the outcomes of those choices. You're not responsible for your father's, but you are responsible for the choices you make. And that includes walking away from the best thing that will ever happen to you. Look, Lou, this has been a nice chat and all. He clapped me on the shoulder. His grip was solid, firm. You couldn't save your mom from an accident any more than you could save your dad from addiction. Now you worry you won't be able to save anyone else or stand losing someone else. My throat was tight and it burned. Lou's grip tightened. Somewhere, deep down, is a man stronger than your father ever was. I see it. Your grandmother sees it. My daughter sees it. Maybe it's time you take a look in the mirror.
41. The New Naomi. Naomi. Knox, look, I know I could have handled things differently, but trust me, it's better this way. If you or Waylay need anything, I want to know. Knox. Liza probably already told you, but the security company is installing the alarm at the cottage Saturday. What time is Waylay's soccer game? Knox. Are you okay? Knox. Just because we're not together doesn't mean I don't still want you and Waylay to be safe. Knox. You can't avoid me forever. Knox. Can't we be fucking adults about this? It's a small fucking town. We're gonna run into each other sooner or later. I pried open one bleary eye and peered at my phone screen. Satisfied it wasn't a certain dead-to-me Morgan brother, I swiped to answer. What? I croaked. Wakey, wakey, witty, came Steph's cheery voice from half a world away. I gave a muffled groan in response and rolled over. I had the covers pulled over my head in a juvenile attempt to block out the entire world. Unfortunately, it had the unintended consequence of also surrounding me with the scent of him. Sleeping in a bed we'd shared while I'd fallen for the farce was not conducive to anything but a downward spiral. If I was going to survive this, I needed to burn these sheets and buy Liza a new set. Judging from your effusive greeting, I'm guessing you haven't yet dragged your definitely getting over him today ass out of bed yet, Steph surmised. I grunted. You're lucky I'm not on the same continent as you right now because your time is up, he chirped. What time? Your woe is me, I miss my stupid hot fake boyfriend time. It's been 5 days. The acceptable mourning period is over. You are officially being reborn as new Naomi. Being reborn sounded like a lot of work. Can't I just wither away as old Naomi? Old Naomi had spent the last few days putting on a fake smile for Waylay and library patrons, then spending a few hours a day half-heartedly trying to clean up the wreckage in the cottage, all while avoiding thinking about Knox. I was exhausted. Not an option. It is 6:30 a.m. your time. Your day starts now. Why are you so mean? I groaned. I'm your mean fairy godfather. You have a transformation to begin, my little caterpillar. I don't want to be a butterfly. I want to smother in my cocoon. Tough shit. If you don't get out of bed in the next 10 seconds, I'm bringing in the big guns. I'm out, I lied. He said something derisive in French. In case you need a translator, that was French for bullshit. Now I want you to get your lying ass out of bed and go take a shower because Liza reports that your hair is greasier than the deep fryer at a sports bar on wing night. Then I want you to open that Sephora order I sent you and snap the fuck out of this funk. I like funks. You do not. You like game plans and to-do lists. I'm giving you both. Having friends who know you really well is overrated, I complained to my pillow. Okay, fine, but I want it on record that you made me do this. Do what? You have an 11-year-old girl looking up to you. Do you really want to teach her that when a boy hurts your feelings, you give up on life? I sat up. I hate you. No, you don't. Why can't I wallow? It was more than hurt feelings, and he knew it. Knox had warned me. He'd told me not to fall for him, not to mistake his actions for real feelings, and I'd still fallen for him. That made me an idiot. At least with Warner, he'd tried to hide his true self from me. It was an excuse, not a great one, but an excuse all the same. But there was no such excuse with Knox. I loved him. For real, loved him. Loved him enough that I wasn't sure I could survive the anguish of being tossed aside. Because all that I'm such an idiot and how could I fall for him, negative self-talk is a waste of time and energy. It's also setting a shitty example for Waylay, who's had enough shitty examples to last a lifetime. Get your ass out of bed, take a shower, and get ready to show Waylay how to burn an asshole's life to the ground. My feet hit the floor. You're really good at this pep talk thing. You deserve better, Witty. I know somewhere deep down you don't think so, but you deserve a man who's going to put you first. I love you. Love you too, babe. I gotta go, but I want a post-shower makeover selfie, and I'm emailing you your game plan for the day. From Steph to Naomi. Subject, New Naomi, Day 1. 1. Get your ass out of bed. 2. Shower. 3. Makeup. 4. Hair. 5. Wardrobe. I know how much you like checking things off your list. 6. Breakfast of Champions. 7. Waylay's soccer practice. Smile. Light up the damn field with your gracious beauty. 8. Host a spontaneous social gathering. Invite friends, family, and Nash. That part is very important. Look amazing. Also very important. Have an actual good time, most important, or fake it till you make it. 9. Go to bed smug. 10. Rinse, repeat. With the satisfaction of 4 items already crossed off my to-do list, I ventured downstairs. The rest of the house was still silent. Steph knew me too well. And it really was easier to fake a positive attitude when I looked good on the outside. There was a fresh pot of coffee waiting for me. I poured generously into a cheery red mug and studied the kitchen while I sipped. The room had taken on a new life since the first time I'd been invited inside. It felt like most of the house had. The curtains had not only been opened, but washed, ironed, and rehung. Morning sun streamed through clean glass. Years of dust and grime had been scraped away, cabinets and drawers of junk purged. Bedrooms closed up for nearly 2 decades were now full of life. The kitchen, dining room, and sunroom had become the heart of a home full of people. Together, we'd breathed life back into the space that had gone far too long without. I took my coffee into the sunroom and stood at the windows, watching the creek catch fallen leaves and usher them downstream. The loss was still there. The holes left behind by Liza's daughter and husband hadn't magically been filled. But it felt to me like there was more surrounding those holes now. Saturday soccer games, family dinners, movie nights when everyone talked too much to hear what was happening on screen, lazy evenings spent grilling dinner and playing in the creek, dogs, kids, wine, dessert, game nights. We'd built something special here around Liza and her loneliness, around me and my mistakes. This wasn't the end. Mistakes were meant to be learned from, overcome. They weren't meant to destroy. Resilience. In my opinion, Waylay was already the epitome of resilience. She'd dealt with a childhood of instability and insecurity and was learning to trust the adults in her life. Maybe it was a little easier because she'd never let herself down the way I had. I admired her for that. I supposed I could learn from her example on that. I heard the shuffle of slippered feet, punctuated by the excited tippy-tapping of dog nails on tile. "Morning, Aunt Naomi. What's for breakfast?" Waylay yawned from the kitchen. I left my morning moping and returned to the kitchen. "Morning. What are you hungry for?" She shrugged and settled on a stool at the island. Her blonde hair was standing up on one side of her head and squished down on the other. She was wearing pink camouflage pajamas and fluffy slippers that Randy and Kitty tried to steal and hide in their dog beds at least once a day.
How about cheesy eggs?" she said.
"Wow, you look nice."
"Thanks," I said, reaching for a pan.
"Where's Knox?"
Waylay's question felt like a blade to the heart.
"He moved back to his cabin," I said carefully.
Waylay rolled her eyes.
"I know that. Why? I thought things were good with you guys. You were kissing all the time and laughing a lot."
My instinct was to lie, to protect her. After all, she was just a kid. But I'd done so much protecting already, and it just kept blowing up in my face.
"There's a couple of things we need to talk about," I told her as I gathered the butter and eggs from the fridge. "I only told Donnie Pacer that he was a dickwaffle because he pushed Chloe and told her she was a shithead loser," Waylay said defensively. "And I didn't use the F word because I'm not allowed to."
I stood up with a carton of eggs in my hand and blinked. "You know what? We'll get back to that in a minute." But my niece wasn't ready to give up her defense.
"Knox said it's good to stand up for people, that it's up to the strong ones to take care of the ones who need protecting. He said I'm one of the strong ones."
Crap. I swallowed around the lump in my throat and blinked back the tears that burned my eyes, threatening to ruin my mascara. This time the grief wasn't just for me. It was for a little girl with a hero who didn't want either one of us.
"That's true," I said. "And it's a good thing you're one of the strong ones, because I have to tell you some hard stuff."
"Is my mom coming back?" Waylay whispered. I didn't know how to answer that, so I started somewhere else instead. "The cottage isn't infested with bugs," I blurted out. Randy the beagle jumped at my legs and peered up at me with soulful brown eyes. I leaned down to ruffle his ears.
"It isn't?"
"No, honey. I told you that because I didn't want you to worry, but it turns out it's better for you to know what's going on. Someone broke in. They made a huge mess and took some things. Chief Nash thinks they were looking for something. We don't know what they were looking for or if they found it." Waylay was staring down at the counter.
"That's why we moved in here with Liza and your grandparents."
"What about Knox?"
I swallowed hard.
"We broke up." The finger she was using to trace the grain in the counter stilled.
"Why'd you break up?"
"Damn kids and their unanswerable questions."
"I'm not sure, honey. Sometimes people just want different things."
"Well, what did he want? Weren't we good enough for him?"
I covered her hand with mine and squeezed.
"I think we're more than good enough for him. And maybe that's what scared him."
"You should have told me."
"I should have," I agreed.
"I'm not some baby who's going to freak out, you know," she said.
"I know. Out of the two of us, I'm a much bigger baby."
That earned me the smallest of smiles.
"Was it Mom?" "Was what your mom?"
"Did Mom break in?"
"She does that kind of stuff."
This was why I didn't have honest conversations with people. They asked questions that required even more honesty. I blew out a breath. "I'm honestly not sure.
It's possible. Is there anything you can think of that she'd be looking for? She shrugged those little girl shoulders that had already carried more weight than was fair. Dunno, maybe something worth a lot of money. Well, whether it was your mom or not, you don't have anything to worry about. Liza's having a security system installed today. She nodded, fingers back to tracing patterns on the counter. You want to tell me how you're feeling about all this? I asked. She leaned down to scratch Kitty on her head. Dunno. Bad, I guess. And mad. Me too, I agreed. Knox left us. I thought he liked us. Really liked us. My heart broke all over again, and I vowed that I would make Knox Morgan pay. I went to her and wrapped an arm around her. He did, honey. But sometimes people get scared when they start to care too much. She grunted. I guess. But I can still be mad at him, right? I brushed her hair out of her eyes. Yes, you can. Your feelings are real and valid. Don't let anyone tell you you shouldn't feel the way you feel, okay? Yeah, okay. So, how do you feel about having a party tonight if Liza says it's okay? I asked, giving her another squeeze. Waylay perked up. What kind of party? I was thinking about a bonfire with apple cider and s'mores, I said, cracking an egg into a glass mixing bowl. That sounds cool. Can I invite Chloe and Nina? I loved that she had friends and a home that she wanted to share with them. Of course. I'll check in with their parents today. Maybe we can have Liza pick some of the country music Knox and Nash's mom liked, she suggested. That's a great idea, Wei. Speaking of parties, Waylay heaved a sigh and looked up at the ceiling. Your birthday is coming up, I reminded her. Between Liza, my parents, and me, we already had a closet full of wrapped gifts. We'd been badgering her about her big day for weeks, but she'd remained annoyingly noncommittal. Have you figured out how you want to celebrate? She rolled her eyes.
Oh my gosh, Aunt Naomi, I told you 9 million times I don't like birthdays. They're dumb and disappointing and lame.
Despite everything, I smiled.
Well, not to guilt trip you, but your grandma will go into hysterics if you don't at least let her bake you a cake.
I saw the calculating look on her face.
What kind of cake?
I booped her nose with a spatula.
That's the best part about birthdays. You get to pick.
Huh. I'll think about it.
That's all I ask. I had just poured the eggs into the skillet when I felt arms around my waist and a face press into my back.
I'm sorry Knox was a douche waffle, Aunt Naomi,
Waylay said, her voice muffled. My throat tightened as I squeezed her hands with my own. It was such a new, fragile thing, this affection she showed me in moments when I least expected it. I was afraid I'd do or say the wrong thing and scare her off.
I am too, but we'll be okay. We'll be better than okay, I promised.
She released me.
Hey, those jerks didn't steal my new jeans with the pink flowers when they broke in, did they?
Fee.
I don't know what's going on between you two, but Knox just offered me $1,000 to put you on the schedule tonight since you called in sick your last two shifts. I can either split it with you or tell him to fuck off. Your call.
Me. Sorry, I can't. I'm hosting a bonfire tonight, and you're invited.
Fee.
Fuck yeah.
Can I bring my annoying family?
Me. I'd be disappointed if you didn't.
42. The Old Knox. Knox. I wasn't going to admit it, but the Ice Princess routine was killing me. It had been 5 days since I'd told Naomi the truth. since I'd ended things to spare her feelings, and I was fucking miserable. The relief I'd expected from ending things never came. Instead, I felt sick and uneasy, almost guilty. It felt worse than my first over 30 hangover. I wanted things to go back to the way they'd been before Naomi showed up with fucking daisies in her hair, but they couldn't, not with her in town avoiding me. It was no small feat, given that she lived with my grandmother. She'd called off from her shifts at Honky Tonk. I'd expected relief that I didn't have to face her, but the longer she went without answering my texts or calls, the more uneasy I felt. She should have gotten over this by now. Hell, I should have gotten over this by now. "Your 5 o'clock canceled," Stasia said when I returned to Whiskey Clipper from my late lunch break spent at Dino's, getting glares and cold pizza that I didn't even feel like eating. She and Jeremiah were cleaning up for closing. Seriously? It was the third client to cancel on me this week. Two of them had rescheduled with Jeremiah and sat in his chair tossing me judgmental looks. None of them had the balls to say anything, but they didn't need to. I took enough of a beating from the honky-tonk girls. "Guess you must have pissed them off somehow," Stasia mused. "It's no one's goddamn business who I see or don't see," I said, dunking the comb back in the alcohol and stowing my scissors. "That's the thing about a small town," Jeremiah said. "Everyone's business is everyone's business." "Yeah? Well, everyone can kiss my ass."
"He definitely seems much happier since he got out of that terrible relationship," Stasia said. She pretended to scratch her nose with her middle finger.
"Who signed your paychecks?" I reminded her.
"Some things are worth more than money."
I didn't need this abuse. I had shit to do, a life to live, and these assholes could just get on with forgetting all about me and Naomi. "I'm going to Honky Tonk," I said.
"Have a great night,"
Jeremiah called after me. I threw a middle finger in his direction. Instead of the bar, I ducked into my office. It didn't feel like a sanctuary. It felt like a prison. I'd spent more time locked in here this week than I had the previous month. I'd never been this caught up on paperwork, or this disconnected from what was going on with my businesses. "Why the hell does anyone in this town give a damn who I date or don't date?" I muttered to myself. I picked up the rent check for one of the apartments upstairs. The tenant had also included a "you fucked up" note scrawled on a sticky note. I was starting to worry that everyone else was right, that I'd done the wrong thing. And that sat about as well with me as the idea of wearing a suit and tie every day for the rest of my life. I liked freedom. That's why I owned my own businesses. That lottery ticket had bought me stability and freedom, although I supposed running my own businesses also sometimes felt like 1,000 fucking zip ties lashing me to responsibility. But it was a responsibility I chose. I could run my businesses without worrying about other people, well, except for the ones I employed and served. Fuck. I needed to get out of my head. I headed down the hall and let myself into Honky Tonk. It was early still for a Friday, but the music was loud and I could smell wings cooking in the kitchen. It felt like home, even though my eyes did a quick scan of the bar looking for Naomi. She wasn't there, and the disappointment I felt cut like a goddamn knife. Silver and Max were both behind the bar. Fee was shooting the shit with Wraith. All three of them looked at me. "Evening," I said, testing the waters.
"Boo!"
they chorused. Silver and Max were giving me the thumbs down. Fee was giving me one thumbs down and one middle finger. The other server, Brad, a new hire brought on to even out the estrogen, refused to make eye contact with me. Seriously, the handful of patrons snickered. "I could fire every last one of you," I reminded them. They crossed their arms in unison. I'd like to see you try, Max said. Yeah, I'm sure you'd bartend and serve and manage just fine all by yourself on a Saturday night, Silver said. Her nose ring moved with the flare of her nostrils. Fuck. I knew when I wasn't wanted. Fine. I could go home and enjoy the peace and quiet of single life. Again. Maybe tonight it wouldn't feel so fucking empty. I'd get used to it. Fine. I'm leaving, I said.
Good,
said Max. Bye, said Silver.
Fuck off,
Fee said. I'm leaving too. Fine. Whatever. I'd go home and work out a new schedule where these three never shared the bar again, I decided. Even if it meant hiring 5 more people. I'd hire guys who didn't get periods and didn't give me shit. I fantasized about that life on the leisurely ride I took on my bike, winding around Knockemout and beyond before finally heading home. After all, I didn't have someone waiting for me, someone to answer to. I could do what I wanted. Which was exactly what I wanted out of life. I was so distracted by reminding myself how great my life was without Naomi that I almost missed the vehicles at Liza's. For a second, I panicked, wondering if something had happened, if there'd been another break-in or worse. Then I heard the music, the laughter. I drove by slowly, hoping for a glimpse of her. No such luck. I parked my bike in my driveway and was headed for the front door when the tang of Bonfire hit my nostrils. If Liza wanted to have a party and not tell me, that was her business, I decided, letting myself inside. Waylon attacked, his paws scrabbling at my jeans as he barked and moaned about how hungry he was since his afternoon snack. Yeah, yeah, come on. Pee break first, then dinner. I went straight to the kitchen and opened the back door. The dog bulleted out between my legs. He didn't stop in his usual pee stop. His stumpy legs were too busy galloping toward Liza's house. I could see the fire from my vantage point. Someone had built a bonfire next to the creek. There were tables with food, camp chairs, and over a dozen people milling around, looking like they were having a great time. Liza's dogs, Randy and Kitty, broke away from the food tables to greet Waylon. I spotted Waylay, her blonde hair under a bright pink hat that I bet Amanda had knit for her. Her friends Nina and Chloe were horsing around in the side yard. The pang in my chest took me by surprise. Waylay dropped to her knees in the grass and gave Waylon a good scruffing. He rolled onto his back in ecstasy. I rubbed my hand absently over my chest, wondering if it was indigestion from the shitty cold pizza. Headlights slashed across the yard as another car pulled in, a minivan that I recognized. Fee, her husband, and their kids piled out carrying camp chairs, covered dishes, and a six-pack. Great. My own family and now my employees were taking her side in all of this. This was why I needed 1,000 acres far away from here. Then I saw her, Naomi by firelight. She wore those tight leggings that showed off every inch of her mile-long legs, boots with the girly fur trim, a thick, cropped sweater under an insulated vest. Her hair was a mass of curls that glowed amber in the firelight. She was wearing a knit hat just like Waylay's, only in a deep red. She was smiling, laughing, glowing. The pang in my chest became a physical ache, and I wondered if I should call a cardiologist. This wasn't normal. This wasn't how it was supposed to go. I ended things before they got too sticky and felt nothing but relief immediately after. If I ever ran into one of my conquests again, which was rare, it was easy, pleasant. I never promised anything, and they never expected anything. But this time, despite my best efforts, there had been expectations. Though she didn't look like she was suffering. She was next to the creek, standing close to my asshole brother, having what looked like an intimate chat. Her gloved hand reached out and clutched his arm. My fists clenched at my sides. Red filtered into the corners of my vision. My brother hadn't wasted a goddamn second, had he? It wasn't a conscious decision to go to her, but my feet had a mind of their own. I strode across the grass toward the happy little group with destruction in mind. I didn't want her with him. I didn't want her with anyone. I couldn't stand the idea of seeing her stand next to him, let alone whatever else they were doing. Fuck. Liza J called to me, and Amanda flashed me a pitying smile as I marched through the festivities. You two didn't waste any goddamn time, did you? I snapped when I caught them on the other side of the fire. Nash had the audacity to laugh right in my face. But Naomi was something else. The easy smile on her face disappeared, and when she looked at me, it wasn't an ice princess I saw, ready to freeze me out. It was a woman on fire, ready to burn me alive. The relief was swift and overwhelming. The tightness in my chest loosened by millimeters. Freezing me out meant she didn't care, but that fire I saw in those gorgeous hazel eyes told me she hated my guts. That was better than cold disinterest any day. Nash took a step forward, effectively putting himself between me and Naomi, which only served to piss me off even more. You got a problem? He asked me. I had a 6'3" problem with a few bullet holes in it. Problem? With you helping yourself to my leftovers? Nah, better she doesn't go to waste. I was such a fucking asshole, and I'd gone way too far. I deserved the beating Nash was about to throw me. Part of me wanted it. Wanted the physical punishment to take the place of the emotional shitstorm that was ripping me apart inside. I couldn't think straight with her this close. This close, and I couldn't touch her. Couldn't reach out and lay claim to what I'd thrown away. Nash's fist pulled back, but before he could let it fly, another body stepped between us. You're a child throwing a temper tantrum, Naomi snapped, inches from me. And you're not invited, so go home. Daisy, I said, reaching for her on autopilot. Yet another body wedged itself between us. If you don't want to go down in history as the dumbest asshole in this town, I suggest you step the hell back, Sloane said. She was glaring up at me like I'd just decked Santa Claus at a library luncheon. Get out of my way, Sloane, I snarled in her face. Then there was a hand on my chest, and I was being shoved back hard. Wrong target, friend. Lucian, looking more casual in jeans and a fleece than I'd seen him in a decade, fisted his hands in my coat. The rage in his eyes clued me in that I was skating on thin ice. I could take my brother, especially when he was one-armed, but I wasn't stupid enough to think I could take on Nash and Lucian and live to tell the tale. I don't need your protection, you big, rich idiot, Sloane snapped at Lucian. He ignored her in favor of backing me away from the fire, away from my family, from my stupid dog who had his snout in what looked like a casserole dish of hot dogs. Let me go, Luce, I warned him. I will when you're not determined to go down and take innocent bystanders with you. Interesting. He was pissed, not because I'd come at Nash and Naomi, but because I'd gotten in Sloane's face. Thought you couldn't stand her, I taunted. Lucian gave me another shove, and I stumbled backwards. Christ, Knox, you don't have to be such an asshole all the time. Born that way, I shot back. Bullshit. What you show to the world is a choice, and right now you're making the stupid choice. I did the right thing, man. Lucian produced a cigarette and a lighter. Keep telling yourself that if it helps you sleep at night. I told her not to get attached. I warned her. I looked over Lucian's shoulder and saw Naomi standing next to the fire, her back to me, Nash's arm around her. My chest tightened again, and that pang was a goddamn knife wound now. Maybe I'd told her not to get attached, but I hadn't done myself the same courtesy. I never thought it was something I had to worry about. But Naomi Witt, runaway bride and compulsive cleaner, had her hooks in me. I did the right thing, I said again, as if repeating it would make it true. With eyes on me, Lucian lit his cigarette. It never occurred to you that the right thing would have been to be the man your father couldn't be? Fuck. That one landed like a bell ringer. Go fuck yourself, Lucy. Try to unfuck yourself, Knox. And with that, he wandered back to the fire, leaving me alone in the dark. I saw a flash of pink out of the corner of my eye and found Waylay standing a few feet away from me. Waylon sat at her feet. Hey, Way, I said, suddenly feeling like the biggest, stupidest asshole on the planet.
Hey, Knox.
How's it going? She shrugged, those blue eyes fixed on me, her face blank. How did soccer practice go? I meant to swing by, but...
It's okay. You don't have to pretend. Aunt Naomi and me are used to people not wanting us.
Way, that's not fucking fair. That's not why things didn't work out between your aunt and me.
Whatever. You probably shouldn't swear in front of kids. They might learn something from you.
Ouch. I'm serious, kid. You two are too good for me. Sooner or later, you both would have figured it out. You deserve better. She looked down at the toes of her boots. Her little heart charm glimmered against her laces, and I realized she wasn't wearing the sneakers I gave her. That hurt, too.
If you really thought that, you'd be working hard to be good enough, not dumping us like we're trash.
I never said you were trash.
You never said much of anything, did you?
She said.
Now, leave Aunt Naomi alone. You're right, she deserves better than some guy who isn't smart enough to see how awesome she is.
I know how awesome she is. I know how awesome you are, I argued.
Not awesome enough to stay, though, she said.
The glare she sent me was years beyond 11 in maturity. I hated myself for giving her one more reason to doubt that she was anything but the smart, beautiful badass she was.
Waylay, come on!
Nina called, holding a giant bag of marshmallows aloft.
You should go, Waylay told me. You make Aunt Naomi sad, and I don't like that.
You gonna put field mice in my house? I asked, hoping a joke would repair some of the damage.
Why bother? There's no point in getting revenge on someone too dumb to care.
She turned and started toward the fire, then stopped again.
I'm keeping your dog, she said. Come on, Waylon.
I watched a kid that I not only liked but respected wander off toward the party with my own damn dog. Naomi greeted Waylay with a one-armed hug, and the two of them turned their backs on me. To be contrary, I snagged one of the hot dogs off the table and a beer. I gave my grandmother a half-assed salute and then headed back to my place alone. When I got there, I threw both in the trash.
43. Day drinking. Naomi. Knox.
I owe you an apology about last night at Liza's. I was out of line.
I took a deep breath, turned off my car, and stared at the side door to Honky Tonk. It was my first shift back since the breakup, and I was tied up in knots. It was a weekend lunch shift. The odds of Knox actually being inside were in the negative, but I still needed a pep talk before getting out of the car. I'd been okay at my other job all week. The library felt like a fresh start and didn't have memories of Knox around every corner. But Honky Tonk was different.
You can do this. Get out of the car, rake in the tip money, and smile until your face hurts.
Knox had thrown his little hissy fit at the bonfire and had to be escorted out by Lucian. I'd done a half-assed job pumping Sloane for information about Lucian's chivalry, but inside I was reeling from being that close to Knox again. He'd looked angry and almost hurt, as if me standing next to his brother had been some sort of betrayal. It was laughable. The man had discarded me like an unwanted receipt and had the nerve to tell me I was moving on too fast when all I'd done was give Nash the list I'd been working on about people or incidents that felt off to me. I looked in the rearview mirror. You are an ice queen swan, I told my reflection. Then I got out of the car,
and marched inside. Relief coursed through me when I didn't see him inside. Milford and another line cook were already firing up the kitchen, prepping for the day. I said my hellos and headed into the bar. It was still dark. The stools were stacked, so I turned on the music and the lights and set about getting the place ready. I'd flipped all the stools, reassembled the soda machine, and was turning on the soup warmer when the side door opened. Knox stepped inside, his eyes cutting directly to me. The breath left my chest, and I suddenly couldn't remember how to inhale. Damn it! How could a man who'd hurt me so badly look so good? It wasn't fair. He was wearing jeans and another long-sleeved Henley, this one in a forest green. There was a fading bruise on his chin that made him look like trouble. The sexy, delicious kind of trouble. But the new Naomi was smarter than that. I wasn't going back there. He nodded at me, but I returned my attention to the soup and tried to pretend he didn't exist. At least until he came too close to ignore. Hey, he said. Hey, I repeated, putting the metal lid over the warmer and throwing the plastic wrap away. I'm on the bar today, he said after a moment's hesitation. Okay. I brushed past him to get to the dishwashing station where two divided trays of clean glasses waited. I hefted one, then found it being snatched from my hands. I've got it, I insisted. Now I've got it, Knox said, carting it up to the soda machine and dropping it on the stainless steel counter. I rolled my eyes and grabbed the second tray. It, too, was promptly removed from my possession. Ignoring him, I flicked on the heat lamps on the expo line and moved to the POS to check the receipt tape. I could feel him watching me. His gaze had a weight and temperature to it. I hated being so aware of him. I could practically feel him skimming me from head to toe. I'd worn jeans today instead of one of my denim skirts, feeling like every layer of protection was necessary. Naomi. His voice was a rough rasp around my name, and it made me shiver. I glanced at him and gave him my best fake smile. Yeah? He shoved his hand through his hair, then crossed his arms. I owe you an apology. Last night. Don't worry about it. It's forgotten, I said, making a show of checking my apron for my bank and notebook.
This doesn't have to be, you know, weird.
Oh, it's not weird for me, I lied. It's all in the past. Water under the bridge. We're both moving on. His eyes looked like molten silver as he stared me down. The air between us was charged with what felt like an impending lightning strike. But I forced myself to hold his gaze.
Right, he said with a clench in his jaw. Fine.
I didn't know exactly how much Knox had moved on until an hour into the slowest shift ever. Normally, a Saturday lunch shift could be counted on for some kind of business, but the whole seven patrons seemed to be content to sip their beers and chew their food 137 times. Even with the new server, Brad, to train, I had too much time to think. Rather than hang around the bar and deal with Knox's moody stare, I cleaned. I was scrubbing down the wall next to the service bar, working on a particularly tricky stain, when the front door opened and a woman walked in. Or strutted. She wore black suede boots with stiletto heels, the kind of jeans that looked as though they'd been painted on, and a cropped leather jacket. She had a trio of bracelets wrapped around her right wrist. Her nails were painted a gorgeous, murderous red. I made a mental note to ask her what the color was. Her dark hair was cut short and worn tousled on top. She had cheekbones that could cut glass, an expertly applied smoky eye, and a wry grin. I wanted to be her friend, to go shopping with her, to find out everything about her so I, too, could retrace her steps and discover that kind of confidence for myself.
That grin widened when she spotted Knox behind the bar, and I suddenly wasn't sure I wanted to be friends anymore. I snuck a glance at Knox and knew I definitely didn't want to be friends. Not with the way he was looking at her with affectionate familiarity. She didn't say a word, just strolled across the bar, eyes on him. When she got there, she didn't slide onto a stool and order what I guessed would be the world's coolest drink. No. She reached across, grabbed him by the shirt, and laid a kiss right on his mouth. My stomach dropped out of my body and continued to plummet toward the Earth's core.
Oh, shit, Wraith groaned from his table.
Is that the boss's girlfriend? Brad, the server I was supposed to be training, asked. I guess so, I said, sounding as if I was being strangled. I'll be back. Hold this.
I handed Brad the dirty rag and gave the bar wide berth.
Naomi,
Knox sounded pissed, but his moods were no longer my concern. My heart was pounding so hard I could hear it in my ears as I headed toward the restroom with every eye in the place on me. I pretended I didn't hear him calling my name or her greeting him.
Knox, seriously? It's about damn time, a throaty voice said.
Fucking A, Lena. You couldn't have called first. This is the worst goddamn timing.
I didn't hear anything else because I pushed through the restroom door and went straight to the sink. I wasn't sure if I wanted to cry, throw up, or pick up the trash can and throw it at Knox's head. I was trying to get myself under control and considering a plan that would involve all three of my options when the door swung open. My ex-imaginary friend strolled inside, hands in her back pockets, gaze on me. I could only imagine what she saw. A pathetic, lovesick, mid-30s loser with horrible taste in men. That's what I saw in the mirror every morning before I covered it up with mascara and lipstick.
Naomi, she said.
I cleared my throat, hoping to dissolve the lump that had taken up residence there. That's me, I said brightly. It sounded like I was choking on thumbtacks, but at least I'd rearranged my face into a carefully blank expression.
Wow, game face. I like it. Good for you, she said. No wonder you've got his balls tied up in knots.
I didn't know what to say, so I pulled a paper towel free and ran it around the perfectly dry, clean counter.
I'm Lena, she said, closing the distance between us, her hand outstretched. Angelina, but I don't like the mouthful.
I took the offered hand automatically and shook. Nice to meet you, I lied. She laughed.
No, it isn't. Not with that first impression. But I'm going to make up for that and buy you a drink.
No offense, Lena, but the last thing I want to do is sit down at my ex-boyfriend's bar to have drinks with his new girlfriend.
None taken, but I'm not his new girlfriend. Matter of fact, I'm an exier ex than you are.
And we're definitely not drinking here. We need to go someplace without Knox's big dumb ears.
I really hoped she wasn't messing with me. What do you say?
Lena asked, cocking her head.
Knox is having heart palpitations out there, and every other person is on their phone reporting to the grapevine what just happened. I say we give them all something to freak out over.
I can't just walk out on a shift, I said.
Sure you can. We have stories to share, commiserations to commiserate, drinks to drink. He's got that cute little helper out there. He'll be fine. And you deserve a break after that shit show.
I took a deep breath and debated. The idea of staying on shift here with Knox was one step below having my toenails ripped out one at a time during a gynecological exam.
What color is your nail polish? I asked.
Burgundy bloodbath. Sloane, just heard that Knox's new girlfriend showed up at the bar and they started having sex on the pool table. Are you okay? Do you need shovels and tarps?
Me. I've been kidnapped by new girlfriend who is actual old ex-girlfriend. We're day drinking at Hellhound.
Sloane, let me find some pants. Be there in 15.
Hellhound was a biker bar 15 minutes out of town, heading in the direction of D.C. Outside, the parking lot was half full of motorcycles. The crap brown clapboard siding didn't do anything to make the place look more welcoming. Inside, the lights were dim, the pool tables were plentiful, and Rob Zombie music thudded from a jukebox in the corner. The bar was sticky, and I had to quash the urge to ask for a sponge and some Pine Sol.
"What'll it be?"
the bartender asked. He wasn't smiling, but he also wasn't overly intimidating. He was the tall, burly type with gray hair and a beard. He wore a leather vest over a white long-sleeved tee. The sleeves were pushed up to his elbows to reveal tattoos down both arms. They made me think of Knox, which made me want alcohol.
"What's your name, handsome?" Lena asked, settling on a stool.
"Joel."
"Joel, I'll have your best scotch. Make it a double," she decided.
Damn it, I knew she'd order a cool drink.
"You got it. For you, darling?"
He looked at me.
"Oh, I'll have a white wine," I said, feeling like the least interesting person in the bar.
He winked at me.
"Coming right up."
"He's no Knox, but I dig the Silver Fox thing," Lena mused. My hum was noncommittal.
"Oh, come on. Even if Knox is a shithead, which he is, you can still appreciate the very fine exterior," Lena insisted.
I wasn't in the mood to appreciate anything about the Viking who'd trampled my heart. Silver Fox Joel plopped our drinks in front of us and left again.
"What are we doing here?" I asked.
Lena lifted her glass.
"Having drinks, getting to know each other."
"Why?"
"Because you didn't see the look on Knox's face right after I laid that closed-mouth kiss on him."
Closed-mouthed was good. Wait, no, it didn't matter. Even if Lena wasn't with Knox, he'd dumped me. I didn't need to concern myself with competition. I ran my finger around the rim of my glass.
"What happened to his face?"
She pointed an index finger at me.
"Fear. I've known that man since he was barely a man, and I've never seen him scared. But I saw fear when he watched you walk away."
I sighed. I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to pretend that there was hope when there was none. I don't know why he'd be afraid of me walking away. He's the one who already did the walking.
"Let me guess. It wasn't you. It was him. He doesn't do relationships or complications or responsibilities. There's no future, and he's letting you go so you can get on with yours."
I blinked. "You do know him."
"I'll have you know, I hold the impressive title of first official non-girlfriend, thank you very much. It was my junior year in college. He was 24. We met at a party, and it lasted 4 glorious hormone and hangover-filled weeks before the idiot got cold feet and handed me my walking papers.
Judging by your greeting, I'm guessing things ended better for you than they did for me."
Lena smiled and took a sip of scotch.
"He underestimated my stubbornness. See, I could do without him as a boyfriend, but I wanted to keep him around as a friend. So I forced him into a friendship. We talk every couple of months. Before he hit that lottery, we'd meet up every couple of years, always someplace neutral. We'd play wingman for the other." I downed the wine in 3 big gulps. Before I even put the glass down on the bar, another one arrived.
"Thanks, Joel."
I traded the empty glass for the full one.
"What's his problem, anyway?"
Lena snorted and sipped again.
"What's anyone's problem? Baggage. People meet, sparks fly, then they spend all their time trying to hide who they really are so they can stay attractive. Then we're surprised when it doesn't work out."
She had a point.
"If everyone just introduced themselves with their baggage, imagine how much time we'd save. Hi, I'm Lena. I have daddy issues and a jealous streak combined with a temper that means you should never cross me. Also, I've been known to eat an entire tray of brownies in one sitting, and I never fold laundry."
I couldn't help but laugh.
"Your turn," she said.
Hi, Lena. I'm Naomi, and I keep falling for guys who don't see a future with me. But I keep hoping the future I'm envisioning for the both of us will be good enough to keep them around. Also, I hate my twin sister, and it makes me feel like a bad person. Oh, and Knox Morgan ruined orgasms for me for the rest of my life.
It was Lena's turn to laugh. Another scotch appeared in front of her.
This guy knows what's up, she said, pointing to our bartender friend.
Two ladies come into this place talking about the same man, and I'm going to keep the drinks coming, he assured us.
Joel, you're a true gentleman, Lena said.
The front door burst open and Sloan appeared. She was makeup-free and wearing knockoff Uggs, leggings, and an oversized Virginia Tech football jersey. Her hair hung in a thick braid over her shoulder.
You must be the new trollop, Sloan said.
And you must be the cavalry coming to save Princess Naomi from the she-beast, Lena guessed. I snorted into my wine. Sloan, this is Lena. Lena is the original Knox ex-girlfriend. Sloan is an overprotective librarian with great hair. I pointed down the bar. And that's Joel, our silver fox bartender. Sloan took the stool next to me, and before her butt had gotten comfortable, Joel appeared.
You date the same guy too?
He asked. She rested her chin in her hand.
No, Joel, I did not. I'm just here for moral support.
You want a drink while you morally support?
Sure do. How's your Bloody Mary?
Spicy as fuck.
I'll take a Bloody Mary and a round of Fireball.
Joel saluted and wandered off to make the drinks. One of the men at the pool table closest to us ambled over. He had impressive spikes on the shoulders of his vest and a Fu Manchu to write home about.
Buy you bitches a drink.
We swiveled on our stools as one.
No, thank you, I said.